We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Getting Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports, at ProFootballTalk.com. And he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Mike, I finally reached my limit of novelty with the Bears kicker drama and the whole reality show nature of it. I was cool with Matt Nagy leaning in, owning it a little bit, making sure that they cannot let it become the elephant in the room, in his words. But it's ridiculous now that they go through the whole competition and they keep two of the eight. And then they go trade for the guy from the Raiders, and I'm at the point now, I'm like, get a guy, stop missing kicks, enough. What are they doing?
You have to wonder how much this protracted effort to find a kicker is going to be a factor in the overall mental makeup of whoever the kicker is, right? It's the one job in football where you're not operating in the moment. You have a chance to think, to watch, to prepare, and then go. And, you know, I said the other day that kicking a field goal is the equivalent of throwing a dart at a board when the board isn't there as you release the dart, right? The board suddenly appears when it's too late to really do anything about it, which is the process of the snap and the hold. And you throw another mental log onto that fire. It's going to take a guy who really can settle down, forget about everything else, tune out the noise, and come in and do it. I was on with the morning show yesterday, and I said, go get Sebastian Janikowski. I mean, I don't know why he retired per se, and I know he's been around 20 years, but he's several years younger than Adam Vinatieri. I would at least explore somebody like that who is proven, who isn't going to get freaked out by all the extra attention, and who can come in and just make his kicks.
Mike, how's the league looking at what the Bears are up to? Because on the one hand, like, they need to be saluted for some kind of innovation and not caring what other people think about how they're going to find their kicker. On the other hand, they're doing this because they couldn't identify a kicker and it cost them a playoff game. And if they didn't have the cash that Ryan Pace or Matt Nagy have kind of made for themselves the last year and a half, they'd look like John Gruden going into the draft.
There's an odd quality when it comes to kickers because you can never predict when your kicker is going to let you down. And then he does, and when does he ever rebound from that? Blair Walsh got ruined by missing a chip shot for the Vikings late in a playoff game against the Seahawks. Never the same after that. Never the same. He rebounded a little bit when he ended up with the Seahawks, but I think that one missed shank that would have put them to the next level, that stays with a guy. And there are so many kickers out there who can do it. And I thought the best approach was a gong show kind of a tryout, because if you can perform under that pressure of trying to get the job, then you're likely to perform when you're trying to keep the job. But I just think they need to be very creative here. And this Eddie Pinheiro thing, I mean, my God, a 2021 conditional seventh rounder that only gets surrendered if he's on the roster for five games this year. I'm willing to go out on a limb and say he's not going to be on the roster for five games this year, right? And it's just another guy to bring in and see if maybe he's the guy. Now, I think really what they need to do is wait for the inevitable veteran kicker gets cut because team is going with younger, cheaper option, like what happened with Dan Bailey last year in Dallas. And that eventually will happen. And for now, you just get through the offseason, you get through preseason, you work with what you have, you hope somebody develops. But I think the break glass in event of emergency option is veteran kicker who gets cut by another team. Or maybe what happens is, you know, if you're still flopping around in the boat looking for a kicker, before that team cuts its guy, it calls you up and says, hey, how about a conditional seventh round pick in 2022?
Yeah, it's going to go all the way through. It could be like the night before the opener. There could be a kicker available that they like. There's seemingly no end to this, and it's going to be a theme of the Bears season, whether they like it or not. And then we get to how Matt Nagy's handling the whole thing by talking about it, even joking about it, calling it the Cody Parkey Challenge. And somebody asked the question, is that what Bill Belichick would do? And my thought was, wait a second here. First of all, kind of who cares? And second of all, when will we be out from underneath the Belichick hegemon of coaches aping him, of him being the industry standard for coach behavior because of his success? When will the generation of Nagy and McVay and the new millennial age player, when will that be the new normal?
When one of them wins six Super Bowls. I mean, here's the thing. The NFL is such a copycat-driven league, and we see it every year. What's the latest trend? What's working for other teams that we can steal or borrow or imitate and therefore flatter? I mean, why aren't teams doing everything they can to emulate Bill Belichick? I know a certain amount of it is impossible because, I mean, he's Bill Belichick, and he's got a capacity that exceeds what most others can do. But you know, Sean McVay, case in point, Rams coach, interview with Sports Illustrated, talking about how he wasn't prepared for the Super Bowl. He prepared the wrong way. He spent too much time on things he shouldn't have spent time on. I mean, this is something Belichick can do in his sleep, and he's got the support around him. He's got Ernie Adams. I think every coach needs to have an Ernie Adams. Belichick has him. I mean, so I think that yeah, emulating Bill Belichick is a good thing. Now, some of the stuff that he does, you can't do unless you have a few pelts on the wall, but you know, how you communicate with the media, what you say, how you say it, what kind of pressure you put on your players. And I think a lot of the grumbling and mumbling from Bill Belichick is aimed exclusively at not putting unnecessary pressure on any of his players. So I think there is some wisdom to watching Belichick and learning from him, because people aren't hesitant to do it when it comes to the plays that he uses. Why would you hesitate to look at how he conducts his business and say, hey, it's clearly working for him. Maybe it works for me.
Wondering what you know about John Lynch in San Francisco and whether or not there's heat around that job. After the Bears drafted David Montgomery and the trade happened, people kind of used the fleecing, quote unquote, when the Bears moved up to get Mitchell Trubisky as, well, John Lynch didn't do anything with those picks. Did he really get fleeced? I kind of think both things can be true. You know, the trade could have been a fleecing and then used on bad draft picks. Those aren't mutually exclusive. How do you feel the Niners front office is kind of operating around their last 2 years?
Here's the reality. Kyle Shanahan rolled into San Francisco as the guy who was in charge of everything. And if the coach is in charge of everything, it becomes much more difficult to hire a general manager, because you can't hire the director of college scouting from the Packers, because the Packers can say, this guy's not leaving because he doesn't have final say over the roster. It's not a true GM job. So for the same reason that John Gruden had to hire Mike Mayock, because Gruden runs the show in Oakland, Shanahan had to hire somebody who was available at the time, who couldn't be in a position where there was a contract that had to be respected with another team. And so this is kind of what you get when you're a coach who insists on having final say. You're not going to have potentially an experienced personnel executive who knows what to do, what not to do, and more importantly, what not to say. They blundered in crowing about that. Remember, they said in the aftermath, hey, we would have taken Solomon Thomas at number 2. We got him at 3. And if Thomas was gone, we would have taken Reuben Foster at 3, and we got him at 31. Well, it didn't work out. And I think the lesson is, don't crow about anything that happens in the draft, because you don't know that these guys are going to work out. So there's urgency for both Lynch and Shanahan this year, but they have 6-year guaranteed contracts with no offset. They're getting their money. So I think both guys are still tied together. And, you know, this year they have an opportunity to turn it around. But if they don't this year and they get into the back half of that contract, then you have to wonder whether or not Shanahan may want to try it with someone else. But the thing is, the more Lynch does the job, the more he's going to learn from his mistakes. The question is, are his mistakes so fatal that he ends up not getting an opportunity to try out what he's learning from all these mistakes at some point?
How big a story is it if the XFL decides they're not going to test for marijuana?
I think it's it. Why should they? Right. I think if the NFL was starting up right now, they wouldn't test for marijuana. They are caught up in this vestige of the Nancy Reagan war on drugs. And there's a collectively bargained policy that they don't want to surrender without a concession. Well, the NFLPA isn't going to give you a concession because players who know how to navigate the testing process don't test positive. It's only players who have a problem or who are dumb who end up testing positive. And why should you make a concession on behalf of all players to protect two or three guys a year? So I think the NFL would like to find a way out of the box. And I think it's smart for the XFL not to test for marijuana on the way in. It's legal in so many states now. It has medicinal value for pain management. And you know, their offseason is going to be even longer than the NFL's. I mean, why are you reaching into a guy's urine? I mean, that's what they do, and testing it when they're left to their own devices, when they're living their lives, when they're not working. I've had a problem with that for years, and hopefully the NFL finds a way to get out of the business of testing for marijuana, and maybe the XFL example will be the thing that the NFL decides to finally copy.
Mike, the deadline for free agents to sign and then still be connected to compensatory draft picks passed in the last 24 hours. There are still guys like Ezekiel Ansah and Ndamukong Suh and Jay Ajayi, and I'm sure I'm forgetting a guy or two. Trey Boston, I think, is out there too. Movement on any of these guys, or is that going to be more like camp casualty, bring these dudes in? There's some names here.
Well, yeah, and it depends upon individual circumstances, too. For example, Ezekiel Ansah, he's got a shoulder problem, so why rush to sign him and bring him in if he can't do anything? With Ndamukong Suh, I have a feeling the reason he's not signed, it's not like teams decided collectively, hey, let's wait until May 8th to sign this guy so he won't count against the compensatory draft pick formula. I think he's wanted too much money, and from his perspective, how much does it take to get him to play another season? And frankly, I'd be inclined to wait until maybe November and sign the guy because he's really not going to bust his butt in the regular season. You see him reach a higher level in the postseason. I'm not going to be surprised if the Seahawks find a way to sign him, though, just because it would be a guy they take away from the Rams and would address an area of need. But, you know, the bottom line is the smart teams at a certain point after that first wave of free agency, they'll just sit and wait and see what's there after May 7 because they've got it all figured out. They've got it all calculated. They want to get those compensatory draft picks because you can really turn those into low-cost young players who help provide part of the foundation of your team for years to come.
Mike Florio, thank you as always.
See you guys.
That's Mike Florio catching us up on the NFL. We've got the Midday Midway coming up next. A French adventurer has crossed the Atlantic in a barrel.
Like a barrel?
Yeah.
That seems dangerous.
He made it himself, and he made it.
We're going to have fun with local news and a Florida woman story all at the same time. We're going to try something different. Think like Mystery Science 3000.
Mystery Science we have Theater fun 3000, yeah. I can think of that. And also, how to get a pothole fixed. This is the way to do it. If you've got a pesky pothole bedeviling you, how to get a pothole fixed.
The Midday Midway is on the way. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Talk football with Mike Florio. Talked about the incident under investigation by the Cubs at Wrigley Field last night involving a white supremacist signal that was flashed behind Doug Glanville. More information to come as they try to get to the bottom of what happened and talk to that fan and figure out what was going on. So we discussed that too, and just trying to educate people about what that sign means now. If you didn't know, that for us, it was always the punch me game.
Sure.
Hey, look here. Look at this. It doesn't mean that anymore. It's been co-opted by what started out as sort of a 4chan troll hoax meme that has since been actually adopted by actual white supremacists as an actual symbol of white supremacy.
It doesn't just mean an okay game anymore.
No.
And it looks like the Cubs are trying to determine intent. That's a difficult thing to do for a complicated thing. but that's their responsibility.
And part of the reason why, part of the reason why it was adopted as a symbol of white supremacist expression and leaning is because it's easy to have plausible deniability. Mm-hmm. It was adopted for its stealth. It was adopted because it counts on people saying, "It's just a punching game." It was, but that's part of why they can use it to immediately say, "Oh, no. There's nothing nefarious about it." And it immediately benefits from so many people who could be counted on to run interference for them. They understood this.
Baseball yesterday, too. Chris Bryant hit the walk-off homer. Lucas Giolito was fantastic. We're going to talk a lot of baseball a little bit later on in the show, but it is time for the Midday Midway. So we're going to do a little bit something different here in one story from mine. But I found this, and it's kind of one of those science stories that I couldn't help but read. They're searching the depths of the Pacific Ocean, researchers, right, at the University of Washington. I'm all about, like, you know, extraterrestrial life and search for crazy, weird things that science doesn't understand or is searching to understand. So we know less about the depths of the, this is the old trope, right? We know less about the depths of the ocean than we do the surface of the moon, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we just have to get down the whole thing. Researchers at the University of Washington have discovered that some microbes in the Pacific Ocean actively breathe arsenic. Cool. Arsenic is poison. It kills just about every carbon-based life form that I know about on this planet, and yet
there's arsenic in potatoes.
Is there really? Uh-huh. Like, obviously not a lot of it. I eat so many potatoes.
Do
I have to worry now? Like, I'm Irish. I have to ask these questions.
You're such a scientist.
Are you kidding me?
A lot of it?
Like, of all of the foods you could have picked, that's the one. Like, I went through like 9 pounds of French fries the other day,
yeah,
and now
too.
I'm all kinds of worried. Probably should worry about the fried oil anyway. They're finding microbes down in the depths of the ocean. The discovery was made in water samples gathered in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Mexico. Genetic analysis on DNA, they found that they have two genetic pathways that are known to help organisms gain energy by converting one form of an arsenic molecule into another and then back again. It's changing. They've previously been found, arsenic-breathing microbes, in hot springs or lakes and stuff like that with really high temperature levels and obviously a lot of arsenic, a lot of quantity there. But it's kind of, as you would guess, changing the way we think. Researchers are thinking about where life could exist and what sorts of energy sources they could consume. It's a mind bender, man. That's what this segment's for.
If you're doing something oceanic, I will too. A French man who has spent more than 4 months floating across the Atlantic Ocean in a giant orange barrel has arrived at his Caribbean destination.
What?
He's a French adventurer. He's 71 years old. Jean-Jacques Savin set off from the Canary Islands off the coast of Africa on December 26th of 2018. Heading west in a barrel-shaped capsule he built himself. He spent the first 4 months of 2019 inside his barrel, traveling about 2 miles an hour with no engine, relying entirely on the ocean current to guide his journey. He surprised locals as he came ashore on the Dutch Caribbean island of St. Eustatius shortly after midnight last week, bringing a 2,930-mile journey to a close.
Did he stay in the barrel the whole time?
He traveled alone in his handmade vessel that measures about 10 feet long and 7 feet wide. It includes a small kitchen and bed and space for storage. He fed himself on fish caught from the ocean. It does not describe how he had enough fresh water, but there have been adventurers in the past mm-hmm. who said that you could essentially, through just eating enough fish and making a slurry of the fish and or the juices from the fish that had desalinated the water, that you could subsist on that. That's not all he brought. He brought a bottle of Sauterne and a block of foie gras for New Year's Eve.
What is Sauterne?
It's a white wine.
Oh, okay.
He also had a bottle of Saint Emilion Red to celebrate his birthday in January. He is a Frenchman, after all. He is going to have bottle of red, bottle of white, whatever kind of mood you're in tonight.
Oh, they're very nice.
And he said his entertainment came from portholes in his vessel through which he watched passing fish. Not his first major adventure. He was a military paratrooper, a private pilot. He climbed Mont Blanc in 2015, and he made it. This dude made it.
So you're telling me that a 71-year-old Frenchman spent 4 months locked inside a capsule eating nothing but fish, wine, and foie gras. Do you have any idea how that had to smell when he got out of there?
I don't know. I mean, the salt.
Yes, you do. The salt. You know
air.
How that would smell.
Well, no, he can refresh with just the sea breeze and the salt air. I don't know. But he made it.
All right, so we're going to try something here in the midday midway. You know my love for Florida man or Florida woman phrase. You know my love for nonsense local news. And in this case, we have a combination of the two. A couple people on Twitter sent me over the weekend the story about the Florida woman who was stopped at a traffic stop.
Yeah.
And then pulled a 1 foot long alligator out of her yoga pants.
Okay. Okay.
That's the story we're dealing with. But I'm not going to be the one to tell it to you. The fine folks at Charlotte County NBC2 News did a story on it, and I thought you just had to hear it.
The most only in Florida story you'll hear today. A couple was busted for having dozens of reptiles in their car, including a gator that was hidden inside a woman's yoga pants. Can't make this up.
NBC2's Destra Montoya is here in the studio, not wearing yoga pants, uncovering this bizarre traffic stop.
Totally bizarre. In fact, Charlotte County deputies pulled this couple over along Oil Well Road and US 41. It was pretty usual, that is, until they found 43 turtles and about an alligator a third of the size of this toy inside the passenger's pants.
Okay, so here we're introduced to local news anchor Nestor Montoya. Perfect hair, perfect teeth, central casting for a modern major news reporter. Montoya is now holding up a foot-long toy alligator, while behind him is a picture of the actual alligator from the traffic stop. Why? I have no idea other than local news. Here's more.
Wild.
I can't even think of it. I can't fathom the idea.
But true.
Unbelievable. People are crazy.
And only in Florida.
You don't know what's going to happen. Different day, different things.
So now we've gone to the trope of local news. Now we're just interviewing random people. No Chiron, no identification whatsoever.
They're all Jerry Angelo.
Just people. Just a very smiley mid-50s woman offering the hard-hitting commentary that Charlotte County local news promises to give you each and every night. There's more.
Early this morning, Charlotte County deputies pulled a couple over for running past a stop. They told deputies they'd been fishing for snakes and frogs under the overpass along Oil Well Road. Before taking off with just a warning, deputies found 42 striped turtles and a softshell turtle in a bag.
What this lady was going to do with them, I have no clue.
But what happened next, even more bizarre.
She must like pain.
Number one, she had to be crazy as hell. Number two, you could go a lot of places with that.
Okay, now that's our first woman. She's been identified. It's Sandy Woods from Lee County. I don't know if that's dramatic effect. Like, oh, we found out who it is. We finally know. Now here comes my favorite part.
Deputies say the woman in the passenger seat pulled a small gator out of her yoga pants before placing it on the bed of their truck.
Now,
I'm glad they say small gator.
We've
pulled an enormous gator out of her yoga pants.
It's gigantic. Now we've cut back to Nestor in the newsroom, where they have clearly convinced some poor intern to wear yoga pants and pull his plastic toy alligator out of their pants. Why we needed a reenactment of what this traffic stop clearly looked like, I have no idea.
That's just good journalism.
But that is. Right? That's what it is.
That's just being
Here's
thorough.
Exactly what it looked like. Finish it off.
Even seeing the pictures, it's just crazy how somebody would just have something like that even in their pants. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
And FWC tells me that they cited both people for possession and bag limit violations. As for those animals, well, they were seized and released into the wild.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess she's glad she wasn't wearing jeans, right? You can't fit a gator.
I know. My biggest question was, how did this gator, how did she even put it in her yoga pants in the first place? Imagine that car ride on the way there getting pulled over and just, it's just so wild.
First instinct, I guess, right? Fight or flight.
How did we all get here?
I don't know.
It's one of those nights where we ask ourselves that question.
One of the most wildest only in Florida stories ever.
I love it when they end with horrible inside jokes to one another that do not land. Just awkward stuff to end it. It's beautiful.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall. The number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. You want to get rid of a pothole? What
I
do you do? Yeah, fed up with a pothole in the middle of their street, a resident of Philly's Point Breeze neighborhood decided to spray paint a giant dong around it. Been trying to get a response from the city, calling 311. The city actually said, "We appreciate a resident using an imaginative way to get our attention, but the best way would be to call 311. And the person who did it said, "I did call 311 and nobody paid any attention." So he decided to walk out with a can of spray paint and just put a big old phallus around it. And that got the pothole fixed, let the record show. And that is the Midday Midway, brought to you by Arlington International Racecourse. This weekend, they're off and running with live racing and entertainment at beautiful Arlington International Racecourse. Friday, leave work early for Friday racing. First race, 3:15. Stay the favorite child. Treat mom to a day at the races. Sunday, visit arlingtonpark.com for details and VIP experiences. Next up, a former Cub who is a part of a documentary that is premiering. Remember Sammy Fald?
I do.
He's going to join us next on Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This segment's brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. Moving some things around because of the news that developed last night, we have the opportunity now to talk to Crane Kenny on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Crane, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. Must have been a long night for you.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having us on. Yeah, long night, but, you know, that's it's an important issue to deal with promptly and hopefully in the right way.
How did you become aware? I think we're all in real time sort of getting a lesson in some of the semiotics involved in what some of these signals mean, can mean, may mean, the difference between what can be implied or inferred here. So what was the process by which you found out and then came to the decision to issue a statement and open an investigation?
Yeah, so our social media team was made aware, honestly, by some viewers who saw it on television. It was not something we saw here in the ballpark, and you know, they were monitoring the social media accounts and saw it picked up. And then, honestly, I wasn't aware that that hand signal had so many different connotations. Then we dug into it right after the game ended. We kind of reached the conclusion that it's more likely than not that this person was using that hand signal as a racist way of interfering with everyone's enjoyment of the game. And that investigation is almost reached its conclusion. We'll have more to say about that in a little bit. But that kind of took us from sort of game end till about midnight. We talked to Doug. I called Doug right after we kind of learned about it and got his view of what was going on. And then continue to build the record through the night. We've reached some conclusions this morning, and we'll be taking action as a result.
Crane, I would imagine that your search for this and kind of investigation into it was probably aided by social media and finding out who this person is and looking into what the meaning behind a symbol might be.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, this is one of the places where social media really was our friend. You know, we hadn't seen it, and to be honest, even if I had seen it on the screen, I wouldn't have recognized what it meant. And then it was called to our attention by some viewers, and after some research, you know, we verified that it is used in the wrong way by some misguided people, and we think that, you know, whether this person is going to ultimately say he intended it for, you know, that he was playing the circle game or some other stunt, you know, the judgment to use that in connection with a respected reporter who happens to be African-American doing his job, and you know, we love Doug, and he does an amazing job for all of us. Connection in his mind, coincidences, is not going to fly here.
How much is the response also informed by other recent stories in which the Cubs have found themselves regarding whether it's leaked emails or what we have known regarding Carl Edwards Jr. and messages directed toward him? Does that mean that there is an extra degree of vigilance at this point?
You know, I don't know I wouldn't say there's an extra degree of vigilance. You know, the friendly confines have been this safe haven, you know, a safe spot for everyone to come enjoy. And, you know, in a lot of ways, we it's the place many come to get away from some of the stresses and difficulties we have to face outside the ivy covered walls, and it's a place of inclusiveness. It's a place where everyone's welcome. It's, you know, we go back to Ernie Banks and his feelings about coming home and why he felt so great about playing at Wrigley Field. And it's true for every fan who walks in the doors, and we're privileged to be able to open those doors to everyone. And so we've always felt, you know, as I say, we have open borders at Wrigley Field. It's why we do tours and everything else. We encourage people to come in and take pictures of the scoreboard and the ivy. And as you know, other than our construction period, you know, it's open all the time because we see it as we are caretakers of this incredible building and this incredible brand, but it really belongs to the fans, and that's kind of how we see it. So if anyone at any time, whether it's this moment or years ago, were to interfere with everyone's enjoyment of the building, we would probably take the same view.
So, Crane, if you're saying that the investigation, I guess, I think in your words, it was more likely than not turned up that this fan had used the symbol for in some nefarious manner. What is the burden of proof that the Cubs want to work with here? How do you guys go about setting expectations for what you can and can't find, can and can't action on? Does MLB help you with any of that in terms of guidelines, I suppose? It feels so weird to put guidelines on something like this in this day and age.
Yeah, you know, we're in some weird space these days. I think we're all living in a different era, you know, and there's been, you know, for reasons I think we all know, you know, the polarization of rhetoric and conversation, and not to get too geopolitical on everyone, but like it's become a very tense world, it seems, with the rhetoric some people use. And so I think we're erring on the side of protecting the enjoyment of all fans, whether they're viewers watching a broadcast or folks in the park. And I think we'll probably be erring on the side of, if this is just really, really poor judgment on this person's part, it still probably is going to lead to their permanent expulsion from the ballpark. And again, we don't do that lightly because we do want everyone to come in and enjoy Wrigley Field. But in our view, the burden of proof would be on him. And trying to think of a way he could convince us this is not what we all think it is.
I wonder how then, with that, as you described, an open borders policy, how can you be certain of the efficacy of an expulsion? Is it more ceremonial? Is there any way you could actually keep someone out of a ballpark if they were bent on getting in? I just can't imagine it would be truly possible for somebody to be kept out in that way.
No, it actually is far more possible today than it was a year ago. So we've gone to digital ticketing. And so to enter the ballpark, and it's one of the reasons we did it. And I talked about when we were talking about why are you going to digital ticketing at the convention, and then since then, and we talked about security, wanting to know who's in the ballpark. It also helps us with counterfeits and fraud. It's also more expedient to get people in. And there was actually just a really well-done piece in the Tribune recently about all ballparks are going that direction and what are the pluses and minuses of it. One of the pluses is we know who's coming into the ballpark and trying to come into the ballpark. So this person would be, put them on, we'll call it the no-fly zone for Wrigley Field, and we should be able to prevent he or anyone else from coming in if that's our choice.
Is there a timeline, I guess, for a final determination made on this? It sounds like you're pretty close, you being the Cubs, pretty close to have made up your mind on this investigation.
Yeah, I think this will be finished today.
Crane, thank you for taking the time to join us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the time, guys.
That is Crane Kenny, the Cubs president of business operations. There's a lot of information there. They have the guy, and they are fairly certain that it was intended exactly as we were discussing earlier.
It's really unfortunate that that's
it's
the
case. It's too bad.
The possibility existed that it was something stupid. The Cubs, according to Crane, have done their due diligence and found that this guy's, I don't know, with either his history, his own social media profile, interviewing the guy, I don't know, probably a mix of those things. More likely than not, Crane said, that he had an intent behind it there, a really awful, disgusting intent.
Great. At least I'm glad that you were absolutely right. You called it. And you said, even in the pre-show meeting, you said, check this guy's Twitter feed, check this guy's Facebook post, and it's going to be littered with stuff that makes it obvious. It's like the pipe bomber. It's like, of course, the guy's, when you say, was it the guy living in the van with the memes taped all over it?
Right.
It's too easy.
It really is at times, and I think that's why, you know, a lot of people have piped up on texts and in calls saying that we're just being idiots and feeding into this whole thing. Maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. It's entirely possible that I'm doing the wrong thing. Lord knows I have before. But in the Cubs investigation here, or in looking at what people are saying to you, listening to the things that they say and looking behind just the innocuous meaning of a hand gesture that's been co-opted by people who want to kill others that are different than them, because that's what's happened. There are other things that have happened with it as well. It's a complicated thing, but people feel, I don't know, emboldened about having these ideas right now. It's clear, and whether it's social media, whether it's Reddit, or whether it's dark corners of the internet, it's there. It's findable. It's identifiable.
Yeah, the texters are coming out. You do know the OK hand gesture is called the circle game, and it's not racist. It was called the circle game.
And for those who have never heard of this before and have been using it, it's still the circle game. It remained the circle game. We're telling you, Crane just told you.
He used the term circle game.
That it's got a different meaning as well.
It doesn't mean that anymore because it's been co-opted. And if you had looked at pictures of that school in Wisconsin where the graduating high schoolers were doing the Sieg Heil salute and the rest were making this symbol, longtime internet troll and white supremacist and Holocaust denier Chuck Johnson uses the sign all the time. It's been used in the background of photos. There was somebody doing it during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. I've learned more about it in the last 18 hours than I thought I would. But I've learned a great deal. I thought it was just a troll job by 4chan.
Yeah.
And it's become more than that. It has become adopted by actual white supremacists to be a coded sign to each other. It was flashed by the mosque shooter in New Zealand as a sign of solidarity with white supremacist groups after he murdered 50 people. Whatever that circle game is, whatever it meant to you, whatever it meant to us, it means something else now. Signals change. Symbols change. 224 says, what about basketball players that use the exact same symbol when they hit a three? That's three fingers in the air for 3 points. It's context.
Context matters.
Context.
Yeah, I try and the purpose of doing it with this symbol, at least for the trolls on you know, whatever, wherever, was to make it a ridiculous conversation like this. Was to make all kinds of connections with all different places and all different kinds of contexts available to them so that they could fly under the radar. And what has happened over, I won't put a timestamp on it, but obviously you've got mass murders that have occurred in this world over a little while, and it's been connected to that act, not a set of ideas, not an argument, not a debate over who, what, where, and when, not that actions that ended lives. And you know, if you don't think the Cubs are right to investigate that symbol as it's connected to people killing people, then I don't know what to do for you. I don't know how to help you. I mean, it's very clear that this was worth the investigation. And as Crane Kenny just told us, the Cubs feel that it's more likely than not, and they'll make the determination, he said later today, more likely than not that this was used with poor intent.
Not just poor.
At best, poor. I won't make a determination. You know, it's possible, an hour ago, it was possible that this guy was just being stupid. That doesn't seem possible anymore, not after we talked with Crane. It's possible that this guy's wanted to do that. It's complex. It's possible this guy just wants to troll and wants you and I to cry into the microphones a bunch. Well, good on you. You got it. Good for you. But it's also possible it's a lot more nefarious than that. There's layers to this. That was the point of it. And I don't think that I don't know what else to do other than just talk about it and talk about the layers to it. Put some sunlight on it.
Yeah, there was a time, a long time ago, when the swastika was not considered a symbol of hate. If you look up the history of that symbol, of the way it's drawn and what it was meant to be in Indian religions. And I don't know exactly what it symbolized, but it was co-opted. It was taken and it was changed. And now it means something different. But that particular sign was a spiritual symbol in Eastern religion that came to mean Nazi ideology. Symbols and signs change meaning, and things get taken from us. Things get
co-opted.
Co-opted. It happens, regardless of whatever circle game you played or whatever okay sign. There are some cultures where it's not an acceptable sign because it connotes an anus.
Really?
Yeah. Not kidding. And again, haven't you traveled? Haven't you gone to a place where things in the guidebook, like the most, hey, by the way, don't make this sign here. Don't make this sign. They don't think it means what you think it means.
Right.
So if you want to get bad looks, you want to get somebody really angry with you in public, make this in here in the United States, it means this, but you go over here, no.
Right. And that's, you know, do you want to, you're going to go over there and make that symbol where it's the thumbs up in the Middle East or whatever it is. I think it's a thumbs up in some places that is an offensive gesture. Do you want to go over there, make that gesture, and then have to explain to a bunch of angry people that it doesn't mean what they
doesn't
think
mean
it means?
To me.
Are you serious?
Right.
Like that's the hill that you're ready to go to?
Yeah, probably not a good idea.
It's weird.
Yeah, Kelly Krull of NBC Sports Chicago has Cubs stuff for us. Cubs flying high. Chris Bryant with a home run that was fun, happy, excited Chris Bryant. And I think you made the point that this team, you forget how much fun it is when he's really good. And I want to get to him also a little bit later. There is something different, tangibly different, and it's not just his stance regarding Chris Bryant. Say that he's switched something up that some savvy baseball viewers have noticed.
Game winner for KB last night. We'll talk about it with Kelly Krull after the break. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.